Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I'm delighted to be here once again. I can't believe March is almost over. We're getting ready to cross over into April. This year is zooming by, but this is going to be an incredible, incredible year for us, regardless of the situation, the circumstances, or whatever may be going on in the world. We have the power to live our dreams. I have my co-host, Shirley Carter Powell. Are you there?
Good evening, everyone.
I am so excited, Shirley. I tell you, I've been busy, 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 and I know you have been too.
Yes, I have. We're super busy. I mean, and today, it's like today the time has flown by so fast, and I still have so many things left to do.
Yeah, time just keeps running out, but you know, we're women that know how to juggle and how to balance things, and women have made some incredible impacts on individual lives, and we've shaped the foundations of companies and birth them into fruitions. And, you know, we're just supernatural beings. Alicia Keys sings this song, I Am a Superwoman. And, you know, really we are. We give birth through, we bring another human being into the earth, and then we run corporations, and then we don't have problems going in the kitchen, even in our heels with our apron, and getting the dinner on the table and still going back and mentoring other individuals to pull them along where we are. Women are incredible, and I know you have a very special queen that you'll be tonight.
Yes, I do. And this, her name is Ellen Brown Harris, and this young lady here has set milestones. She's made history, and she's still making history. And I want, you know, her energy level and the things that she's done, you know, I've read many bios in my lifetime because of what I do, but to have someone that have a bio that could take up six pages, it's like, oh my God, it never ends. And I am so honored to have her join us tonight to shed some insight on other queens and kings that are out there listening. And, you know, it falls in line with March is the month for women, and to continue that women are making a difference. And it's like this year, it's really been phenomenal for women to step forward and speak out. So happy to have her on with us tonight. Aileen, are you there?
Aileen, are you there?
Ellie? Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello, ladies.
Hello.
I am so excited to hear about your incredible journey. Shirley told me so much about you, and I said, yes, let's have her on because I believe in celebrating our queens that have made accomplishments. My great philosopher Horace Mann says that we should be ashamed to die until we've made a major contribution to mankind. And you, my queen, have done that. So I can't wait to hear all the great strides that you've made in our world, how you've impacted so many individuals.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
And just tell me, I want to start. One of the things I want to start with is that your career, and reading your bio, you are HBCU. You went to Alcorn.
That's correct.
And then the other thing is that when you graduate, tell our listeners about Alcorn. What was your experience like there?
It was one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had. I had an opportunity to go to quite a few universities, and I chose Alcorn because we were in the middle of the woods. It's like they took the university and they sat it in the middle of a forest, but it was beautiful with the trees and it was quiet and you didn't have a lot of distraction. So that was the place that I chose to spend my 4 years, and it was the most rewarding experience I have ever had. And I got a chance to do things that be in different clubs, and my major was business education, and I worked while I was on the campus there at Alcorn and interacted with the faculty and the staff. So it was good. It was a great experience.
Wonderful. And being in a place that you spent 4 years there, and in your bio, you talk about your career at Chevron. So was it at Alcorn that you decided that you wanted to go work for Chevron? How did that come about?
Well, my mother's sister lived on the Gulf Coast. So when I graduated from Alcorn A&M, one of the civil rights leaders, which was Charles Everett, that was in Fayette, Mississippi, he came out and he interviewed several students at the university. He was looking for an executive secretary. And I thought for sure that I would take that job in Natchez, Mississippi. But after discussing it with the family, they said, no, I think you should choose another task. So I went to the Gulf Coast and I spent some time with my mother's sister. And she said, just come on down and just enjoy your vacation with me since you've been in college all these years. And after about 2 weeks, her mind changed. She said, okay, it's time to go out and find a job. And I said, really? She said, yes, you need to find a job for your little incidentals that you need. And so I did. I went to Chevron, and they had a job opening at the time for in Central Records. And I told them, I said, well, after 3 months, I will be leaving on. And little did I know, when I finished that assignment, they had an opportunity for a female to work in the laboratory. And they had all the ladies go and take this test. And I made 130 on this test. And I was told that the highest ever made was 80. And so I was all packed up, ready to go. And then the boss came to me and said, well, how much money are you going to be making for this other job that you're going to be taking in Mississippi as executive secretary and working in the principal office? And I told them how much it was. And he said, okay, we'll give you twice the amount of money if you come and work for Chevron. And so I did. So I started out in their laboratory and humongous, multi-million-dollar equipment. And I said, well, I'm a business education major, I said. I only had a little bit of chemistry while attending college. And they said, that's okay, we'll train you. So it was on-the-job training. So I ended up being a chemist after 4 years because they would pay you as you go along with the training. And I excelled. So I was their first female that they ever allowed to work in their laboratory in the history of Chevron. And my feeling is that anything that you do, you give it all that you have. So I was able to move up from the lab technician to the head inspector and then to the trainer. So I was training new employees on the various processes. And so after that, I became the supervisor and then second in command in El Segundo, because after some time, I was able to transfer from the Gulf Coast to El Segundo Refinery here in California.
So during your tenure at Chevron, you said you were the first female that ever worked in their lab. But as an African-American woman, were there any other males that was even African-American working in their lab, or were you the first African-American to work in their lab?
The first African-American to work in their laboratory that they trusted. And my assignment was basically was testing jet fuel for the commercial aircraft. And it went on to the submarine ships. We had a vast schedule and the aviation gasoline for the small aircraft and thinners and asphalt. For the road, you know, for building highways, crude oils, various grades of gasoline. So it went on and on. Diesel oil. So it was a massive training program that they had, and you had to learn how to perform each test over a period of time.
So that is really a milestone in. When I spoke about you graduating from an HBCU to go on to be the first African-American to work at Chevron in their lab, and then to go even further to go into management and chemistry and being a person to test the jet fuels on the commercial airline. So those planes that we were flying when you were working back in those days, the fuel was tested out by you. You were one of the instrument into making sure we had the proper fuel in those planes. And I think it's just a huge milestone, really, because for not only being a woman, but being an African-American woman, and I can't help but go back to think about Ms. Johnson when she was doing the mathematics for going into space. There's so much in our culture that is not taught and we don't know about, but history is being made every day. And you're here to talk about it and to present it out there. Now, let me ask you this question about in working in that environment, was it predominantly male? Was it a situation like that for you?
Yes, it was all males. They didn't have any female at all. And actually, it was so ironic that I was able to make a few other milestones, because when I went to work for Chevron, after I got married, they didn't have any processes in place for if you took maternity leave. So I was their brainchild that helped them say, okay, after you've been off for 6 months or whatever, this is the rules and guidelines, because they didn't have any. They never thought that they needed to do it, and all of their equipment was in the laboratory was set really high, and I'm only 5'3", so to run those laboratory tests, I had to step onto a footstool to get up there to run the various tests, being so short, and then get down and go back and forth. So the way that I was brought up, my mother always instill in us that there's nothing too hard for you to do. You try. And when I'm on the job, I'm very, very serious. And I knew that it could be danger in working into a laboratory, because you're working with chemicals, acid, you're working with gasoline, and everything had to be within the ASTM specification. And if it was not right, then you stood a chance of ruining engines, like in the aircraft, or just have all sorts of problems. But we were the type of group that everything was tested and retested, and you might have an auditor that walk in and say, I'd like to get a gallon container of the fuel oil that you just released, or someone in the laboratory. And you had to produce that sample, and they would send it out to an outside laboratory just to see if what you said was in it, was in it. So they always got a report. So you could not play. You had to be very serious about everything, because you had to sign your name. And bone integrity, that was very important to me, is to do the right thing.
Wow. That was a big task for you to take on, and to think about,
yeah,
you know, the lies. Really, you have to think about the lies that you were responsible for. If you put the wrong thing in that, tested that fuel wrong, because as you said,
yes,
it could destroy. So you did,
yes,
from your bio, you did 38 years with Chevron. And
38 years, yes.
That's a long time. And then now,
yes,
after you're retiring from Chevron, then I see you go into real estate. You get licensed in,
yes,
that. So
yes,
you retired to get busy in something else.
Yes. Yes. And I was always the type of person, I never could sit still and do anything. I didn't want to be one of those person that retired and you never get out of your house coat during the day. You just sit around, you eat, and you do nothing. So before I retired, I said, okay, I'm going to get my real estate license. And I did that, and I set myself a timeline. So within 6 weeks, I had my license. After I did that, I said, okay, I'm going to get my notary license. That way I can go into hospitals and sign documentation, you know, for real estate, or if someone had an emergency and they needed a documented, notarized, I could do that. So I love staying busy.
And
yeah,
speaking of busy, then you go into all this community service. How did you get involved in community service? Because your bio is just so packed full of community service. It reminds me of two or three people doing community service. You are serving on so many different boards and organizations. Tell our listeners about some of the boards and organizations that you're serving on. But before you do, I want them to know that if you just got on the call, we're speaking with Aline Brown Harris. She's walking in her purpose. This young lady, as I stated, a HBCU graduate, the first African-American to work in the lab at Chevron and to be a female at that, and not only to work in the lab as a tech but become a chemist and then move up to management and spend 38 years with them, and now a realtor, a notary, and now community service worker serving the community, every level. And when I say every level, everything from board to community activity, dealing with youth, college students. How do you, you know, tell us about some of the stuff you're doing.
Thank you. Well, for many years, I just wanted to just do things to help others, because I remember when I was going to college, there was always someone there to help me. And to give you an example, I was a candy striper at this convalescent home, and the manager there said, whenever you come home for semester break or any time, just put your uniform on and come to work. And that's what I did. And I was given the hard patients that did not like to take their medication, and I would take them for walks and just do things like that. So, and I just decided that whenever I retire, that I was going to give back to others. So some of the things, committees that I did, I worked with the Boys and Girls Club, and I helped raise money for scholarships, and I participated in those fundraisers. I would model in the fashion shows, and we would give scholarships. In one organization, I was the chairperson of the Carson Women's Club. In over a two-year time, we gave out 60 scholarships to undeserving young ladies, boys and girls. And we wanted to make sure that we reached back and helped the ones that didn't have the grades, like the C's, the C-minus. Because I always felt that if some students are given the opportunity to get their foot in the door, they will excel. So that's what I'm continuing to do right now. Now, after the Boys and Girls Club, I was the Girl Scout leader for 18 years in Carson, and I taught the kids how to cook, you know, how to write a resume, how to do various things that was important as being a Girl Scout. And I also had some of the girls to graduate in the program during the Bush administration. They would go all the way to the top. So that was really gratification. And then being with the Lions Club, Top Ladies of Distinction, I was in all the Democratic clubs, the Progressive, the Gardena, you name it. And then at some point, I started getting rewards myself. I was in my district, I was Woman of the Year. And in another district, 55th Assembly District, I was the Extraordinary Woman of the Year. And then I worked on the Obama campaign. I received the Eleanor Roosevelt Award, and I have so many plaques and certificates here that I had to get a certain area just to put them in. So now, being married so many years, my husband said, okay, you can't have a whole room now. You're going to have to start putting them away in boxes, you know, so we can room in the house.
So you had your wall of fame. That, you know, I'm laughing because I have my wall of fame. And yes. I began to get so many. I started, you know, I got tired of looking at some of them. I said, okay, I don't have any space left. I made a wall in my office. Just for that, you know, when I say a wall, I painted it a different color just for those things. I do understand that. But I really want to hear more about, looking at your bio, the National Congress of Black Women. How did you get involved with that?
Well, that was another one of my dreams, to be a member. And it's ironic that I went online on the website for the National Congress of Black Women, and I was looking at it, and I said, okay, I want to join this. So anyway, I put in a request through the website, and lo and behold, about 2 o'clock in the morning, my phone rung, and it was the CEO and the chairperson of the National Congress of Black Women, which was Dr. Ife Williams. And she walked me through how to fill out that application. And she said, well, where do you live? I said, I live in Los Angeles. She said, okay, I'll get you hooked up with that chapter. So that was in 2009. And I started out, I volunteered for 2 years to be the chaplain. And then I went to the treasurer for 2 years. Another 2 years was a financial secretary. And now I am the chair of the Los Angeles chapter. And
wow.
We do. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying, wow, the steps you took. It went from, you know, always a desire to be a part of it, to become a member, but you took the steps to get to where you're at now to be the chair of it. So you know all the working parts of that chapter, as far as being a member, because a lot of people join organizations and they just like to have their name on the roll and say that they're part of it. But you were active in the organization you know, and you was making 2-year commitment to one thing at a time, to now you're the chair of it. So you walked the stairway to get to the top.
Yes.
As a member of this organization, one of the things that, some of the things that, you know, what I'm reading that it does and everything, you know, and me knowing too, because I end up coming in to be a member of it, it still falls in line with your purpose. And because tonight's show is about walking in your purpose, everything that you've said led to your purpose that what God had for you. And the youth are involved in this. And one thing about the National Congress of Black Women is there's a youth chapter. And you're still helping people, helping women. And, you know, for our brothers that are on the line, there's a Good Brother program, too, that's involved in this organization. So when you talk about the National Congress of Black Women, not only are you in the L.A. chapter, but with your bio, you are also on the national board?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, and I have several positions, believe it or not. It was I'm a lifetime member of the National Congress of Black Women, and I'm the Far West Regional Director that I help disseminate information from the chair, because we have quite a few chapters all over the world, and I really would like to come to Michigan and open up a chapter there. If there's you only need 25 ladies that are dedicated to making a difference in this world. So if you are interested, someone, we'd be happy to help you start a chapter, even more than one, in different areas. And that's one of the tasks that I have. And one of my most important slogan that I try to keep in mind is that vision is the art of seeing the impossible. And that's what I believe in. Because I know there's enough in this world for everyone to volunteer and to help others, because it's such a good feeling. And within our Los Angeles chapter, we're in the process of making sure that we have more ladies to come into the organization, because we're finding out that when we're working together, we're very powerful. And this year, we're putting on a luncheon in August the 18th here in Carson, California. And our theme is 2018, Woman of the Year. And what we try to do is make sure that we empower women and we get behind them and we help them to accomplish their goals. There's no one that's selfish to want to keep everything for themselves, but we work as a team. And I think that's the best thing in the world, because women are very, very smart. They're passionate in what they do. And I think that we can make a difference in this world. And just to add to that, every year we attend a national brunch in Washington, D.C., and it's at the very end of the Congressional Black Caucus. So we have thousands of people that descended in Washington, D.C. And I know that this year when we go, they'll be working on gun protection, violence, and change the laws so that we don't have students that's very young that's buying guns. And so there's so many initiatives that we have, and we have it's a 501c nonprofit organization. And I'm going to leave the website with our guest, our person that's in charge of this program. So if you decide you want to donate in any way to the chapter to help us with our initiatives, we would appreciate that greatly.
So can you just tell us the website of how they can reach you? Is it, you know, we ask that you don't give out a personal number, but how can the listeners get in contact with you if they want more information?
Okay, more information, they can contact, they can call. Well, this is the number for the organization. It's 800-895-3180. And the website address is www.ncbwinclac.org. And if more information about the overall national chapter, which, like I said, you can contact them at info@nationalcongressbw.org.
Okay, thank you so much. And it's been wonderful interviewing you, and unfortunately we're out of time. Is there any closing remarks you'd like to make?
Yes. The closing remarks are to do everything that you can to help someone else. Pay it forward. And if you're in the grocery store and say someone don't have enough money, maybe a dollar or two short for their groceries, just do something kind. And that's called act of kindness, because you never know how down and out this person may be. And just you doing that gesture will put a big smile on their face and make them feel good, and it make you feel good. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to be on your show, and maybe at some point we can come at another time and we can bring our board with us.
And that would be with Dr. Valerie. I would look forward to having you come back again and stay even longer. And you were incredible. I thank you so much for sharing, and also that tidbit about how we need to respect one another and empower one another, even in the grocery store.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I would like to close out with a quote. And this is one of my favorites from Oprah. And it says, "Think like a queen. A queen is not afraid to fail. Failure is another stepping stone to greatness." I salute all of the queens that are on tonight listening to the show. Dr. Val, have a wonderful night. And Aline, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show.
Thank you. Good night. My pleasure. Good night.
Good night.